Marini's Media.
Neil Warnock wants one last dance. Graham Wesley's got his running shoes on, jogging all the way to the foot of League Two. And Owen Doyle misses Swindon even more than Sam Parkin does. It'll be Salop versus Salah in the FA Cup. And you can mark an X on your Kyle Lafferty transfer bingo card. All that adds up to an utterly typical week in the EFL. Yes, welcome again, one and all, to your one-stop shop for all things from the never-anything-but-bonkers world of the English Football League. I'm Matt Davis-Adams. New year, same lame jokes and tedious references to the two-time European champions from me, I'm afraid. The good news is, though, that I've got a full-strength lineup of panellists chomping at the bit to get stuck into the whys and wherefores from the Championship to League Two. First up, you might know him better as an experienced dynamic CTO and program manager with a rare mix of management and technical operational skills, specializing in software development, cloud computing, mobile telecoms, platforms and app development. But only if you're into turning data, documents, processes and transactions into compliance-ready, immutable, unhackable proof and provenance chains for ISVs and enterprises. For tactics and stuff, you're far better off listening to this Adrian Clark. Good morning, young man.
It was very long-winded, but I applaud you.
It's somebody on LinkedIn called Adrian Clark's bio. You're right, it's too long. He needs to chop it down a bit. Alongside Adrian, I was going to write my own intro for him, but instead, I'll just lift what somebody going by the name of the Duke of Banbury put on the comments section of an interview with the Swindon Advertiser. Hanky's at the ready. It's a real tearjerker. Fantastic footballer, fantastic guy. My eldest lad was named after him and born in delivery suite number 9. He signed a picture, presented me a bottle of bubbly, which still sits proudly in my boy's room. I still have his signed shirt. Never forget the day he left us. I was in tears. Not many players would venture into the CG Hotel, thank the fans and say goodbye. The freedom of Swindon awaits then for Sam Parkin.
That's very nice. And that was an incredibly moving time when I went into that pub after my last game with one of my best mates. Still gets talked about to this day.
Well, I looked at all the comments under that article, by the way, and they were all fulsome in their praise of you. If you ever need a little ego boost, just Google that.
It's not somewhere you'd go for a nice drink on a Friday evening, the County Grand Hotel. I'm sure it's seen some things over the years.
You're a good lad, aren't you, really?
Yeah, bless
you. I'm impressed by that.
Oh, and also Joe Crilly is here. Hi, Joe.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Right, let's play the Warnock Wheel of Fortune. Neil is 12 matches shy of reaching 1,500 in charge as a manager. He says he wants to get back in the game this season, partly because, and I quote, we're doing a bit of renovation at the house in Cornwall and it'll be finished at end of season. Where do you think he could end up? Not many vacancies at the moment, Sam. He says he doesn't mind going down to a League Two club. Do you think there's anybody in particular he's got his eye on?
I've absolutely no idea.
No, nor me. It's a weird one.
I've not given it a second thought. I was going to say, you know, he's obviously been a specialist in getting teams into the Premier League, but remember him doing that wonderful job at Rotherham a few years ago as well, where keeping a team away from trouble. So I don't know. It depends what type of challenge he wants or whether he wants to stay maybe closer to home down in the southwest. But yeah, it'd certainly be probably an asset to any team, maybe not in the Championship, trying to get a team out of that level anymore. Maybe, you know, that ship has sailed.
Yeah, he's not been afraid to go anywhere in the country, has he? The one team that stand out to me, and I hate doing it, that needs a new manager, in my opinion, to save them is Luton. So that's the standout choice for me. But Luton's players don't seem like Neil Warnock players. The other names I jotted down: Birmingham, maybe, Bristol City, possibly, if they were going to make the change with Lee Johnson. And before the weekend, you might have started to think about Ipswich, you know, with Paul Lambert. He's been linked with that job before. But you're right, there's no obvious standout role for Neil Warnock. He wants to get to 1,500 games, doesn't he? So it's all very selfish of him. I'm sure he'll do a great job whenever he does get back in.
So the managerial market is kind of quiet. The transfer market, meanwhile, busier than... Where's a busy market? The one on Portobello Road in Mary Poppins. That was quite busy, wasn't it? Another Mary Poppins reference, not quite as good as last week's. Some moves that have caught the eye. We're a bit late on this one, but Owen Doyle back to Bradford. Just want to know on this, Sam, obviously you were with Richie Wellens on Saturday. That's one angle to it, but I'm interested in what the Bradford players would have thought about his return. Would there have been a little bit of resentment maybe because he was quite public in the fact that he didn't really want to go back? Or are they players pragmatic enough just to say, well, this guy can score goals to get us?
Yeah, I think they are. I think they'd be delighted to have him back. They'd be watching on and been jealous probably not having him as an asset in their side. The quandary is whether he can fit into the style. We know that they've got Vaughan, who they can obviously hit probably a little bit earlier in attacks, and they like getting the ball wide and delivering using the wide players. So obviously it didn't work at the weekend at Crawley. Swindon won handsomely there not so long ago. He got a hat-trick, I think, on that day. So we're going to have to wait and see. I understand Swindon tried to keep him. Of course they did. They made some kind of an offer to keep him at the club, but I think that was rebuffed, and I wouldn't be surprised if he starts scoring goals for Bradford and maybe he has a future at that club over the next few seasons. It can potentially turn around for him up there, I think.
And from his perspective then, Clarkie, he's just got to try and shake off the disappointment that he's gone back there quickly and realise that, you know, this is the club that have essentially been paying his wages, or the bulk of them.
We're all assuming he's disappointed, but of course he wouldn't have wanted to have left Swindon where it was working so beautifully for him. He was on the verge of smashing all sorts of records there. So I understand the frustration, but it doesn't mean that he's absolutely gutted to be going back to Bradford. It's a great club, big fan base. He could propel them towards the automatic places. They're definitely in the mix, aren't they, the Bantams? So I wish him well. Sam's right. Players want the best players in their team. So obviously some of the strikers might be thinking, my chances of game time have suddenly been shortened, but you've got to get over that. You want the best players available, and they had to do it. If Bradford made no attempt to bring Owen Doyle back, then their fans would rightly question their ambition.
A couple of Chelsea players on the move to get an opinion on. Sam Markger, he's somebody who you and I have watched a lot of at academy level. He's gone to Swansea on loan. We like the look of him, and again, it's Steve Cooper making the most of his connections from his time at the FA. It's kind of a logical one, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely, and he's shown that he can step up comfortably when he's got minutes in the Chelsea first team. So yeah, he's probably one I'd have looked at and made the comparison with Tomori maybe a season or two ago and thought that Gerhi had more potential.
All right.
And had less of a mistake in him. Well, Tomori's been exceptional, don't get me wrong, and he's going to be, already is a top player, but this boy's got a load of potential. We had Steve Cooper obviously on the show last week, talks a lot of sense and getting the band together, Brewster as well, and obviously Conor Gallagher heavily linked in the last 24 hours. I'm disappointed for the Charlton supporters because he's been sensational for them. It's going to be an enormous loss for them. Do I see Swansea getting in the promotion mix? Probably not. But I think in terms of a fit, the way that they play Swansea and that they play one sitter with two attacking midfielders at the moment in a 4-3-3, I think he slots into one of those roles absolutely perfectly. So when you look at the way the teams around the playoff set up and the teams going for automatic, I can understand why he would flourish in that system.
Yeah, we've had a tweet from Ollie Glanville, Clarkie, at the Totally Show, if you want to get involved in this, asking where do the chaps see as the best fit for Conor Gallagher. Matt from Peckham adds, get him to Forest, please. But Millwall's the other club that's been mentioned.
Yeah, I don't see it as a natural fit at Millwall. They're playing a 3-4-3 at the moment, aren't they? And that I think would not necessarily extract the best from Conor Gallagher, who likes to break from deep. And if you've got two central midfielders in that system, it's harder for them to do that. So now I think Swansea's a great fit because he will know Steve Cooper. There's other young players there. Yeah, they're obviously looking to replicate the Derby model from last season, aren't they, Swansea, in terms of getting the cream of the crop from the Premier League teams and see how far it can take them. What's the logic here with taking him away from Charlton and then taking him to Swansea? Is there an issue between Chelsea and Charlton? What are they unhappy with? I'm just a little bit sort of at a loss to explain why. If Conor Gallagher had been loaned to Leeds or West Bromwich Albion, a promotion push, better players around him, I get that. Or even to a Premier League team. I don't understand the logic here.
No, I don't think anybody knows at the moment exactly what the reasoning is. I suppose, you know, they've been very low on numbers and it has been a struggle the last few weeks, but he seems to have been enjoying his football. He's certainly been flourishing. I think it would be even bigger, bitter pill to swallow if he went to Millwall, one of the rivals as well. But I think you're bang on there, Adrian, because even if he, you know, he could play a free role behind a central striker, but Jed Wallace is doing that. They're playing the 3-4-3, as you say. So I don't know where he fits into that system. If he plays deeper, it'd be alongside Malumbi, who's another young kid in his first season, really, playing regularly. So the Swansea one on the face of it is a better fit. But yeah, I was a little bit saddened, I have to admit, because I thought he, you know, to stay the season at Charlton would have been great for his development.
Well, while we're talking about Charlton, they've had a bid accepted for Marcus Madison, not gone through at time of recording that one. That will soften the blow a bit of Gallagher going, but it's a big old blow for Peterborough's chance of promotion, isn't it? I know he's not been in great form of late, but...
Well, they've all the big boys up top for Peterborough have levelled out, haven't they? And you do wonder whether the January transfer window has had something to do with that, because they've all been linked with other clubs. So have they taken their eye off the ball? Potentially. Marcus Madison is a real talent, capable of the spectacular, we know that. Great dead ball technician as well. So look, it's like for like, I'd imagine that they've lined him up knowing that Conor Gallagher was going to leave. So, no, look, that, I think, would work for Charlton. So, and I wish them well. But, yeah, for Peterborough, it's upsetting, I guess. But they've just spent big money, haven't they, on the Barnett player. So they'll survive and thrive again, I'm sure.
Clarkie, a couple of Arsenal youngsters who've come to the EFL to get your opinion on. Emil Smith-Rowe to Huddersfield on loan. Tyrese John-Jules to Lincoln on loan. Smith-Rowe had that loan in Germany last season. Didn't work out for him, so this is a big move for him.
A year ago, he was on the verge of becoming a regular in the Arsenal first team, but he's been plagued by injuries. So he's a real talent. I like him as a footballer. He's just short on fitness at the moment and short on a little bit of confidence. He's seen other players younger than him or his age overtake him in the last 12 months. He's a little bit of a De Bruyne in terms of style. He's a good technician, runs with the ball, excellent deliveries. I think it's a real coup, actually, for Huddersfield. And once he's up to speed, I think he can make a difference. He can become a match winner. He'll break into the box a little bit like Gallagher did for Charlton and score goals. And he'll put quality into the danger zone for the big strikers and for Carlin Grant. I'll tell you what, Carlin Grant will be pleased about Smith-Rowe's arrival. Tyrese John-Jules is another player of promise. He went on the tour with the first team in the summer and scored a few goals. He's rough around the edges, strong, powerful, better suited to League One than a Smith Rowe. So and actually, I think he will fit in quite well with Lincoln's style. So yeah, it seems like there's all change at Lincoln at the moment, doesn't there? Bruno Andrade, of course, moving on. That's an interesting one. That is because he, by the sound of it, has wanted to run his contract down and has accepted an offer from Salford that dwarfs anything Lincoln can give him financially. So that tells you where Lincoln are at the moment compared to even clubs in the division below.
Yeah, and he was good for Lincoln in League Two last season. Darren Randolph has moved to West Ham from Middlesbrough. Billy Clark was the player who Ian Holloway was talking about last week. He's gone to Grimsby from Plymouth. Kyle Lafferty from Sarpsborg to Sunderland. Sunderland announced this one with the tweet, he's 7 foot and he plays the flute. Apparently they didn't realise that is a reference to a sectarian chant which Rangers had about him. Good old football Twitter feed. Always worth digging up the quotes from the Palermo owner Maurizio Zamperini after he booted out Lafferty. He said, he's an out of control womaniser, an Irishman without rules, someone who disappears for a week and goes on the hunt for women in Milan. He has two families with 6 children. He never trains. He's completely off the rails. On the field, he's a great player because he gave us everything he had and more. In terms of his behaviour, however, he's uncontrollable. My coach told me he cannot sort this player out, so he has to go. Sam, David Priest of this parish was very critical of the tweet, and rightly so, but also critical of the transfer. I was amazed to see that Lafferty's 32. He's had more clubs than Tiger Woods.
Yeah, there's some really good stuff actually from Gareth McCauley on it as well, former Northern Ireland captain and obviously one of his teammates. I played against Kyle Lafferty, obviously north of the border, and watched a lot of him at Rangers, and he's undoubtedly a player with a lot of talent, but I think you kind of have to build around him, the team first and foremost, but I think also the manager has to allow him to maybe have a couple of misdemeanours. There's a lot of baggage that comes with him. I don't understand it, considering how well Sunderland are going at the moment. To have someone who's been a disruptive influence before, someone who is brilliant once in 5 games, once in 10 games, it is not going to shoot Sunderland up the table. They're going brilliantly at the moment. Maybe he mirrors a little bit what White gives them. He's probably got a bit more to his game, but at the moment, they seem to have found a formula which means they're not just lumping aimless balls towards a central striker. So, seems like a strange one. I'd be surprised if he gets many goals, to be quite frank.
So all those players on the move, but not Jared Bowen yet. He's still in the Championship, and that's where we're heading next.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show in association with William Hill.
Championship headlines: Leeds losing to their former manager whilst West Brom couldn't take advantage, drawing 2-2 with Charlton. The Baggies now winless in five. Thomas Frank signed a contract extension at Brentford till 2023. His B's outstanding of late. They've narrowed the gap on the top two to 6 points. And Wayne Rooney's Derby County sure know how to score goals.
Half away. Oh, Dwayne Holmes! Oh, what a hit! What a marvellous goal! Dwayne Holmes' first goal since March is well worth the wait. A magnificent goal right on 90 minutes.
Well worth a look at those. Yeah, didn't feel good saying that, to be honest. Leeds 0, Sheffield Wednesday 2. Gary Monk won at Elland Road. That's Gary Monk, former Leeds manager, current Owls man. Gary Monk's troll game is unrivalled in the Championship, by the way. Ask Grant McCann, he'll tell you if you can plug his phone in to charge it to text you about it. 0-0, same old story. Leeds having all the chances, nothing happening. And then, almost inevitably, this did.
It's Nuiu into Jacob Murphy all alone. Oh, but Murphy scores! And Wednesday lead with 3 minutes left in normal time. Oh, lovely pass for Adam Reach. And he's got Nuiu in the middle. That settles it. Ati Nuiu stepping off the bench, making one and scoring the other.
Those goals you might well have heard and seen on the EFL on Quest. So if we were to be dramatic, we'd say things like, it's happening again, and run around in circles with our hands flailing in the air about Leeds, like Michael Scott.
OK, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
What's the procedure, everyone? What's the procedure?
Stay calm!
Wait.
Everybody calm down!
But we wouldn't do that. None of us support Leeds. If you do, we're thinking of you. Barry Casty has tweeted us to ask the question we're all pondering. Are Leeds going to mess up promotion again? Adrian, it's the old or quickly becoming Championship trope. Bielsa's team, second half of the season, lose their steam.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Well, they're in danger of it, aren't they? They've got to stay strong mentally, haven't they, now, and not panic. That's the key. And I also think the board need to act, and they need to knock their heads together with Bielsa and his team and say, right, what do you need to get us over the line? That this is the time to show ambition, not to sort of sit on their hands and hope that history doesn't repeat itself. I still think they're a great team. I still think that they should go up. The one or two tweaks I'd make, I think they're better with three at the back. I don't know what you think, Sam. I've looked at it, and the 4-1-4-1 works. It's by and large works well, but all five defeats have come when they've played that system, when they've started that. I think it's become a bit predictable for opponents to read. When they go with the unusual three at the back, I think that their fluid movement can confuse and flummox certain teams. And I know that we've spoken about this before. When an opposition team puts up two strikers, Bielsa instantly goes to three at the back. I think that's what he likes to do. I think Bielsa just needs to sometimes veer away from the norm, because he's become easier to read. And I was looking at I love a stat, and it feels like it's a myth, you know, about Leeds. We know it's not a myth that they blow up in the second half of the season, but of late it's, if it doesn't work for them in the first half, then they're done for in the second. That's not actually true. They've scored 29 second half goals, only 14 in the first half. So it's not something that's plagued them the whole campaign. So, I think they're going to be all right, Leeds, but they have to really be careful and regroup mentally here, because it could start running away from them, especially with Brentford on the charge.
Sam, surely one thing they've got to do this month is get some backup for Patrick Bamford. They had Nketiah. He's gone back because he wasn't playing. I know he likes to keep his squad small, but you know, you can't rely on one person to get you promoted.
No, it's a big issue. Che Adams seems to be the one they want, but Alex Crook, Southampton expert for TalkSport, has said that there's no way that's going to happen at the moment. Phil Hay, who covers Leeds United for The Athletic, seems to think there's still some room for manoeuvre. So he would be a tremendous sign-in. The problem at the weekend wasn't really wastefulness in front of goal. It was actually a lack of creativity. No gilt-edged opportunities missed at all. You know, I was keeping my eye across the game. There was a couple of chances, I think Harrison and Bamford, but the creativity a bit of a problem. So Hernandez returning off the bench should really solve that. He's their most creative player and he will be once again. But I think the midfield's been an issue. No Forshaw, Roberts missing as well. It's meant Dallas has had to play in there. It's just upset the rhythm and the trusted formula. And defensively, the stats don't lie. They've conceded four set pieces since the middle of December. This is incredible. Casilla conceded six goals from the last seven shots that he's faced in the last three home games.
Blimey.
And not had a clean sheet in six games. So the wheels have really fallen off in that regard. A bit of a problem down the left-hand side as well. We seem to have been saying that repetitively. Mm. Alioski again coming into the game the other day, and that's when they conceded, when Douglas wasn't on the pitch. So I think when they give the ball away because of their enthusiasm to get forward, sometimes the balance is just not on and they're getting picked off. You saw that with the Sheffield Wednesday goal. So
Cooper got done for pace, didn't he? So yeah, that's why it's maybe the three at the back might just spread the load a little bit there. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see. I agree completely with what Sam's saying.
We ought to give some love to Wednesday because they actually won the game. Very, very streaky at the moment. Not necessarily the best recipe for promotion, that. Do you think, Sam, they can maintain a playoff place? It's going to be tricky without Stephen Fletcher for a couple of months.
Yeah, well, they need a striker as well. We went with Winnell the other day and Nuhu coming on, fourth injury time goal of the season, which is incredible. He's obviously an asset, but better from the bench. That's Gary Monk unbeaten against Bielsa, three wins and a draw. So it's no fluke. And we talk about what Leeds are doing badly maybe at the moment. Well, Sheffield Wednesday, yeah, it's all very well being defensively well set up and resolute, but then you have to beat the press. You have to get it into good areas of the pitch, dangerous areas. Then you've got to have the quality to finish. And their game plan was carried out brilliantly. And I said it on Saturday night. I loved the first goal. I thought it was brilliant from Bannon and a lovely slip ball from reach across the area. And the finish is absolutely delicious. So well done Wednesday. But yeah, they'd have to replace Fletcher, I would suggest, to make a run of those playoffs. Mm.
A quick one from Ed Quoth the Raven. How did Sam react when he saw what Richie Wellens was intending to wear for EFL on Quest?
Listen, I'm never going to have a go at someone for having a go. I'd much rather someone have a go than turn up and be safe. So it's not.
Hang on, you've already had a go at my jumper this
No, time. I haven't. You clearly didn't listen. I like it.
Okay.
I like it. I just said you used to be quite safe and now you're fully embraced in Peckham life. But Wellens, not something I'd go for. But the roll neck and the blazer, I saw Jeff Shreves and Phil Babb sporting last night on the debate. So it's obviously the route that the footballers are going down these days. But I'd rather someone be out there than be safety.
Roll necks in 2020. That's the fashion, apparently. Speaking of the EFL on Quest, you can find it on Freeview Channel 12, Freesat 167, Sky 144, Virgin 217, or just go online at questod.co.uk. Let's look ahead to a couple of the bigger games going down this weekend, starting at Craven Cottage, where Fulham take on Middlesbrough, the Friday night game. Is that an advantage for Scott Parker's team? Do you think Sambora played on Tuesday while the Whites have had a free week?
Yeah, you'd have to say so. We saw Brentford getting off to a flying start as well last weekend, putting pressure on West Brom and Leeds. I think that maybe has a slight effect. Maybe in the recovery for Mitrovic, letting him have a free week, because that's a big issue going into this game.
No goals in three coming into this one.
Is he okay? Because Parker was worried, wasn't he, that he was going to be out for a while?
Yeah, it looks like he came down on his ankle, I think, and the possible replacements at the moment are sparse. You're talking Kamara's been out with a knock. Cavaliero has played there. Bobby Reid, obviously, he's been in decent goal-scoring form, but not as a striker. And I know he's done it as a one before at Bristol City, but probably better with a partner in my eyes. And the only other option on the bench at Hull at the weekend was Jay Stansfield, who is Adam Stansfield's son, if you remember, who passed away from bowel cancer in 2010, was at Exeter, joined Fulham in the summer. He's got 23 goals in the academy teams, and that was his first taste of being around the first team. So that shows you know, just how light they are in that department. I'm not suggesting they throw this young man into a championship game, but that's a big problem. But obviously the biggest takeaway, I think, from Fulham's win at the weekend was just the defensive solidity. He ended with six defenders on the pitch. Scott Parker, which he's been criticised for not being proactive enough during games. going with Odoi and Christie at fullback, so maybe losing a little bit offensively, being a bit more secure. And Kevin McDonald, last league start of the season against Barnsley on the opening day, he was immense at the weekend, and it's something we've spoken about a lot, being a little bit lightweight in the middle. So defensively looking a lot better. Can they find someone to get the goals on Friday?
Mm. In terms of Borough, Clarkie, first of all, do you reckon they'll stay in London? It's only a couple of days.
Yeah.
Oh, they are. Abby says they are staying
okay.
in London.
Okay. Well, that's a good sensible.
Training
makes
at Palace. Yeah,
makes sense to me. It's like a little mini break. Good for team morale as well. Obviously, some of the wives and girlfriends will be fuming. But
some will be delighted.
Yeah, some will be delighted. No, I think that's a smart move from Jonathan Woodgate. Look, they did okay, didn't they, against Spurs? They made a fight of it. Pride intact after that FA Cup defeat. Across the last 10 games in the Championship, they're top. They're the best team in the Championship across the last 10 games, which is amazing, really. But I've sort of said all along that I felt that Middlesbrough were better than their results were suggesting. I think that's coming to bear now. I like the three at the back system. The issue they've got, they've lost Ayala, haven't they? And it means that they've got McNair back in the back three. You've also got Johnny Housen in the back three. And for me, both of those guys are better in midfield. McNair's been outstanding in midfield. He's played in a number of positions, but he's been great in midfield this year. So that worries me, because Fulham's strength is obviously in it with the front three. Cavalero's on top form at the moment, curling goals in for fun. So that's a concern for them. But Wing is playing great. He's a good technician. The right wing back, we talked about Fulham's left there being a little bit unbalanced at the weekend, but solid. You've got this Jed Spence, who's really caught my eye of late at right wing back. I think he's a name to keep your eye on. But the biggest plus for me is the form of the front guys. They've suddenly got the bit between their teeth, haven't they? Fletcher scoring good goals. Gested roughing up defenders again. So I think this is a really interesting game. Really interesting, because I look at both forward lines and think that they can really hurt the other teams. Back line. So I expect goals here, actually.
Yeah, looking forward to that one on Friday night. Meanwhile, at the Den, it's going down between Millwall and Reading. To paraphrase the Kaiser Chiefs, I predicted Rowett would be a success, but I didn't think he'd have this big of an impact. Millwall start the day within a point of the playoffs. What's he done, Sam, to change it so dramatically?
Well, a change of system that we've spoken about already, but not stuck to that system. We've seen him revert to 4-4-2. We saw him do it early against Luton, but they're playing more football out from the back. They're playing into midfield. Malumbai, who I've spoken about already, has been very important in that. I think the confidence levels seem to be sky high at the moment, improving individual players as well. I think there's been a huge change, really. And also freeing up their best player, Jed Wallace, in a different position. He's playing in a front three, but it's a free role. He can go wherever he pleases. And that's obviously been the biggest thing for them offensively. He's doing a terrific job. And the 2-1 reverse at Reading was Mark Bowen's first home game in charge of them. And it was Rowett's third game in charge. So they have both changed the systems since then, Reading and Millwall. And obviously, to great success. The big problem for Millwall is Williams sent off. He's missing for three games now. And they have no central midfielders at all. Ben Thompson's out injured. There's no Aidan O'Brien at the moment, who could possibly fit in there. Young lad Billy Mitchell could play, or they're going to have to play someone out of position unless they can bring someone in before the weekend. And with the way Redden have been going, with Charlie Adam, believe it or not, alongside Pele and John Swift playing as a 10, the middle of the pitch is maybe where the game can be won at the weekend. So that's a big concern, I think, for Millwall.
All right, so that's Millwall. Reading-wise, Clarkie, they made my son cry at football for the first time last week. Well, really, it was me when Jeff Sterling threw over to the Mad Stad and I screamed, no! Because of Tobias Figueiredo's own goal. It meant Reading haven't lost in 7. And like Millwall, actually, their decision to change the manager has proved justified. And we're quite quick to jump on clubs when they do sack and change the manager mid-season as poor planning. But sometimes it's the best idea.
It's true. Yeah, absolutely. It is working for Reading at the moment. I tell you, it's a complete transformation, isn't it? I mean, Gomez wanted to play expansive football, 3 at the back, passing through the lines. It was all about possession. Not that bothered about possession, is he, Bowen? It's a very different setup. 4-2-3-1. two solid players in there, as you've alluded to, of Adam and Pirlo, or is it Pedro Ribeiro? I don't know. Never know what to call him. But what's worked brilliantly for them, from what I can see over the last few weeks, is down the left with Blackett and Ejaria, who I think is a player. I really, really like his work. Obviously, Swift has been scoring goals as well for them. They're flying, aren't they? They're top of the six game form table, Reading. So they're certainly on the charge. But yeah, Ejaria, what I think was happening earlier on, and they will do this on occasion. They'll use maybe Pele as the holder with Ejaria and Swift in front. That's what the system was before. And I think Sam was the first one I heard to say, "Is that a little bit fancy without the ball? Is that robust enough?" Well, what's happened is they've got another body in there in Charlie Adam and just got Swift there in front, and they've moved Ejaria to the left. And he's been brilliant in terms of his step overs and creation, forming a good combination actually with Tyler Blackett, who might go to Turkey, I'm hearing. He's been linked with a move to a couple of big clubs over there. So that would be a shame for them. But yeah, no, Reading going in the right direction. I think he's getting the best out of the players. And yeah, I like them in a back three, to be honest, previously when I saw them. But it's working better with a back four. They're not conceding goals. They won at Preston. That's a great result. They won at Fulham. Why can't they go to the new Den and win at Millwall?
We spoke to Mark Bone's predecessor, Jose Gomez, about his time in Berkshire and the way he was able to rebuild the relationship with the club and the fans.
When I arrived in Reading, the club was completely destroyed regarding the ambition, the hope. And the way that we start working, the way that we start to organize the team, the way that step by step the hope level growed, the fans start coming more and more and more to the stadium. It was a mix of the things. And we, like a manager, we cannot forget that if the club exists, it's because in the past the fans organize themselves and they create the club. So they are the foundation. So we must respect them. And if we play good football, attractive football, nice football, of course, if we win, it's better. Normally, it's the most important thing. But if we play good football, we have more people in the stadium. And it's amazing when you have more people in the stadium, when you feel the support from your fans. And what happened in Reading was a mix of the two things. I take care of this point. I demand from my players to respect them, and the fans like it, and they start coming more and more. It was a very nice end of the season, last season.
We also spoke to him about whether he thinks he'll be returning to managing in England.
I really believe that I will have my space in the future in the English football. I feel it. Maybe not next season, but very soon I will be there again. And I will be there even stronger than I'm feeling right now, or when I felt when I work in Reading, because now I really know what happened in the English football and what happened around the English football. So I think it was a fantastic experience that gave to me the opportunity to be even stronger and prepared to deal with the challenge that the English football brings.
For more of what Jose had to say, head over to the totallyfootballshow.com. Super Joe Crilly, odds on those championship games, if you wouldn't mind. How about the Friday night game? Fulham favourites against Middlesbrough?
Yeah, they're odds on, but only slightly. They are 4-5 to win the match, with Middlesbrough 100-30 and the draw 5-2.
Millwall Reading, I think this is going to be a draw. What will you give me on that?
Well, it's quite a short price, actually, for the draw. It's just a shade above 2-1. Millwall are slight favourites to win at home at 11-10, with Reading 27-10.
And we've spoken about Leeds choking. Have their price to get promoted, has that changed significantly because of recent events?
It's drifted a little bit. They're still very much the favourites to go up. They're still an incredibly short price at 1-12, but they have been as short as 1-25 this season to get promoted. So that price just drifting a little bit, and Leeds fans will certainly be getting a little nervous, I imagine.
Terrific. Hey, League One, get ready. You're our next port of call.
Get great offers every day with William Hill. Join today and get £30 in free bets when you bet £10 using the promo code C30. Whether you like great prices, free bets or in-play scoreboards, William Hill has you covered. William Hill is who you play with. Promo code C30, new online customers only. Minimum £10 stake, win only. Minimum odds 1-2. Free bets paid as free £10 bets, 30-day expiry. Free bet payment method, player and country restrictions apply.
Tales from the third tier include Paul Warne, top of the league for the first time in his managerial career. His Rotherham side above Wickham on goal difference. Ipswich won at the weekend for the first time in eight and swiftly followed that up with a 0-0 at Oxford on Tuesday. The Tractor Boys now just 2 points off the top two. And it's all very tight in the middle like a Richie Wellens turtleneck. 5 points separate Burton in sixth and Lincoln in 15th. It really is vintage League One. Three fixtures on Tuesday night. Oxford versus Ipswich, as we said, was goalless. But Sam, there was what you delightfully referred to as a water delay. I think my nan had one of those a couple of weeks ago.
I've been in Oxfordshire for a couple of nights and it was...
What have you been doing?
I've been away at a spa.
That's very nice.
With my girlfriend.
I thought the skin looked radiant, actually.
Oh, I had a glorious day yesterday.
Yeah, face pack?
No, I had a treatment on the previous day, just yesterday.
You had your nails done?
No, I had a massage. just in and out of sleep yesterday, listening to podcasts, just reclining next to the pool. It was sensational. but there was a lot of wind and rain outside, and a friend of mine was going to the game, and I was like, no chance that's going to be on. Well, if it's on, that is not one going to be one for us purists. Mm. And that's how it proved. They were taken off for 17 minutes. 18 minutes, I understand, in the first half. So 18 minutes added on. It had a bit of an effect on the football, as you would anticipate, because Oxford play good stuff and like to play out. Well, they couldn't last night because of the conditions and because of Ipswich's high-intensity pressing game now, I suppose, with the two strikers and Judge. Playing as a number 10 means they can go and get after teams. And I think that's something maybe missing from Oxford's game, where they can go a little bit longer with Mackie and obviously Taylor, the two front players that they alternate between. I think that's a bit of an issue for them at times. And the biggest, the most contentious thing in the game last night was a potential penalty on Norwood in the first half from the returning Messinio's foul, which wasn't given. And Lambert felt that should have been a penalty. So I think on the face of it, considering the result of the weekend, that's a fantastic result for Ipswich, who are showing great powers of recovery.
Also in midweek, Burton Albion beat the McDons, courtesy of Liam Boyce's 14th goal of the season, and Lincoln Wallop Bolton 5-1. Sorry, Joe, you're just looking forward to next season now.
Yes, I am indeed. The little run of three wins in a row seems an incredibly long time ago, and the fans are starting to turn on the manager, believe it or not. On the message boards now, you kind of see some fans turning on the manager and the other fans placating or trying to placate those by saying, well, at least we've still got a club. But I think there's some who think that that isn't quite enough and that we should be at least putting up a bit more of a fight in this almost inevitable slide towards League Two.
Yeah, it was a mountain to climb and you got a hill to do it. to the weekend then, and more specifically to the Keep Moat, Doncaster Rovers versus Coventry City. Coventry in the playoff places, Doncaster just outside after winning three on the spin, keeping clean sheets in all of those games. A couple of late goals won their game at Bristol Rovers last week. Adrian, Darren Moore's men really stepped up, and as the season's gone on, you can see more and more his influence.
Yeah, definitely. I've been impressed with the run that they've been on. 13 points from the last six, only three goals conceded. So they've been very tight. The shape of the team has been good. You can see that he's worked on that. And I think they've stumbled on a really good central midfield partnership in Whiteman and Sheaf. I remember Ben Sheaf as a young player coming through at Arsenal, and he's played as a striker, he's played as a centre half, and now he's playing in midfield. And I was looking at the game against Bristol Rovers, and one of the goals that Doncaster scored in the game, it was beautiful football. It was patient. It was calm. It was measured. Sheaf was at the heart of it. Whiteman finished it off. So I think that those two guys will be key men for them in this game against the Coventry team that have good footballers, no doubt about that. This is two decent teams. I think that Doncaster have the advantage because they're at home. They're really strong at the Keep Moat. 25 of their 37 points have been there in Coventry. Just two wins away from home, which is bizarre, really, given that they're in the midst of a promotion race. So no, I'd lean towards Donny here. But yeah, no, impressed with the work that Darren Moore's doing. He just needs a striker, a prolific striker. I think that's where they're a little bit short. They've been linked with Okunobiri from Shrewsbury, who we've mentioned before on this show. He's a handful. So and he might be the kind of player that works well. So I would say that they're a technically good team, and they're just lacking that little bit of quality in the forward areas. They've got powerful players, but maybe they need a little bit of nous around the box.
As for Kov, Sam, only lost three times in the league all season, fewest of any side in the division. They've set up this tenants versus landlords cup tie with Birmingham by winning their FA Cup replay against Bristol Rovers. I feel like Mark Robbins is maybe one of the most underrated managers in the EFL at the moment. Is that going a bit too far?
No, I think he's a very good manager. I think AD Vivash, who we both know of his work, I played alongside AD. I think he's got quite a lot to do with the setup and the way that Coventry City are playing this season, because it's very different, I believe, from previous seasons. They're obviously playing quite an interesting system at the moment with that kind of box midfield, which we've seen before in the Chelsea Academy teams. And I mean, they were very lethargic against MK Dons at the weekend, and they've been so good recently, those back-to-back away 4-1 victories, with it all coming together with Matty Godden. If Adrian talks about Doncaster needing a striker, I think we've stuck to our guns this year that Godden is the man for Coventry. He was disabled a little bit by injury recently, but I mean, he's obviously silenced a few critics with that. So what he did last night after the lethargic performance was he rested the front three, and the lads who came in, Alan O'Hare, the lad who's on loan from Villa, who's going to have that great occasion obviously playing against Birmingham, that they were tremendous last night. And I think that just shows you they've got real strength now, Coventry City, playing a nice brand of football. The two most important cogs in that are Fankati Darbo, who we know again from Chelsea, and McCallum, the left wing back. They completely rested last night, and I think that's very interesting going into the weekend, because Taylor and Sadley are the two wide boys for Doncaster, have been very good recently. If they can occupy the two Coventry wing backs, then Doncaster can maybe get some success. But I remember watching this game early part of the season, and Coventry absolutely battered Doncaster at St Andrews and had to rely on a last minute goal from Bakayoko to get a share of the spoils. And Doncaster played very much on the counter attack. Coventry really wasteful. Can't see them being wasteful again now.
Also this weekend, MK Dons against Sunderland. Russell Martin getting his feet under the table and his team out of the relegation zone. They did suffer their first defeat in five league games against Burton. Are you seeing much improvement under the new gaffer?
Definitely an improvement, and I think that they will survive. I don't see them going down. And a few weeks ago, they were definitely in a more perilous position. Can I just say, League One is... I think anyone from 1 to 16 could win the league.
Isn't there?
It's 11 points. 1 to 16. Shrewsbury in 16th. They've got two games in hand on 33. The leaders, Rotherham, on 44. It's all to play for, isn't it, between now and the end of the season? We could see so much alter between now and the playoffs. So that's mad. But no, MK Dons are doing well, aren't they, at the moment? He's started to... He's obviously got his strikers back. They battered Burton, by all accounts, last night. The shot count was frightening in their favour, yet they ended up losing. It was just one of those nights for them. They've beaten three strong teams in a row at home, so they've got their confidence back at Stadium MK to beat Oxford Pompey and Bristol Rovers. And Sunderland don't really get clean sheets on the road. So I think they've got a really live chance here of springing an upset. Yeah, there are options up top. I mean, I've just knocked the microphone off there. Carter Morris has come in from Norwich on loan, adds to the options, doesn't he? So he, if things aren't working now, Russell Martin can change it. And that was an option that wasn't really afforded to Tisdale. And I do like Nombe. I think he's a young player that offers them real power. They've got other types of strikers there, but he could be the difference between propelling them, well, the difference between them being in a relegation battle or fighting their way up to the mid-table. Another good game to preview this one.
You've got Sunderland, Sam. They look to have turned a corner after the walloping of Wigan. Well, this could be a League One game next term, or it could be two divisions between them. Sunderland have sold 4,000 tickets for this trip to Milton Keynes. Do you think that this is going to be something other than 1-1?
Oh, Yeah, I mean, I could see... Well, MK Dons have picked up brilliantly. I wanted to say about Ben Gladwin, the other lad they brought in this week, who the link there will be Luke Williams, who's now assisting Russell Martin, ex-Swindon manager. Ben Gladwin was brilliant for Swindon for a year, 18 months, where I watched him most weeks. Something brilliant I've always felt, Adrian, about a tall, elegant central midfielder. You know, he can play a variety of different positions, but it's quite unique when you've got someone well over 6 foot who can handle a ball and go past people. Fantastic ability, just struggles a little bit with fitness. So the Blackburn fans will be listening to this thinking, what on earth am I talking about? Because he's hardly kicked a ball for them. But I think that could be a brilliant signing.
Where will he play within the system then?
At the point of the diamond, okay. I would say the top of the diamond. When I say he struggles with fitness, because of his build, he's someone who struggles after 70 minutes, 80 minutes if he's not had a run of games. So might take a while to get him up to speed, but certainly someone to keep an eye on. Sunderland have been brilliant, and you know, I watched the majority of the first half the other day, and it was done obviously at half time against Wickham, and I spoke about that temptation to hit the big centre forward, and we anticipate it going to happen because it's Phil Parkinson. Well, they're actually moving the ball incisively, quickly now, and yes, they can still cross the ball for White, but some of the football was brilliant. The two centre halves on the outside now are involved in this as well, Flanagan and Willis getting involved in attacks. And Tume down the left-hand side with Gooch, that relationship's blossoming. And Tume was getting, pick my words here, but he was certainly getting a bit of stick early part of the season playing as a left-back. Well, this 3-4-3 that Parkinson has settled on now seems to be getting the best out of him. And it's a system which the manager seems happy with, the players and the fans, finally. And it's been such a problem to critique Sunderland all season. And so, of course, they're going to lose games and it's how they react and if they can change the system again. But, you know, it didn't do too bad for Chelsea playing one way throughout a Premier League winning title season a few years ago. So they're looking really good. And yeah, I think it's not too soon to start saying that a few Sunderland fans are probably eating a little bit of humble pie, but let's see what happens.
Win their game in hand, they're 3 points off the top. This, you know, this is a Sunderland that have apparently been awful this season. So it's mad, isn't it?
League One is good fun. I think that's what we can surmise from that. Those League One games then, Joe, we mentioned Coventry's away form hasn't been great. What price them to get the win at Doncaster this weekend?
They're 13-8, so very, very slight outsiders to win the game. Doncaster 6-4, with the draw 5-2.
And MK Dons against Sunderland, I'm guessing the away side are the favourites here.
Yeah, and you can get a little bit of odds against, which I find surprising given their recent form. They're 21-20 to get the win. MK Dons 5-2 and the draw the same price.
We've spoken about how tight it is, I was going to say at the top, but really from the top to nearly the bottom of League One. Who are the favourites for promotion as we speak before this weekend's games?
Yeah, this is an ever-changing market with seemingly different teams at the top of the betting each week. But at the moment, it's Rotherham who hold that position. They're even money to get promotion. Ipswich and Oxford both 7-4 with Coventry a fraction of a price behind at 15-8. Sunderland then at 9-4, Portsmouth 5-2. I could go on and on. All the way down to probably Burton at 11-2 in the promotion market.
Now then, you know where we're heading next, don't you, listener? That's right, it's our old friend League Two.
This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis-Adams.
Where the headlines are, Stevenage boss Graham Wesley ended up running to their match against Port Vale because he got stuck in traffic. It was a 5-mile jog, so whilst he may not have got the win, at least he got some fresh air. Speaking of being all close together and that, there are five teams on 44 points in League Two. Five! Cheltenham, Crewe, Plymouth, Bradford and Forest Green Rovers. Goal difference really could be worth an extra point come the end of the season. Off the pitch, a winding up petition against Macclesfield Town has been adjourned until March 25th. A lawyer representing the club told the judge they intend to sell shares and an offer has been accepted. So that palaver continues. And shout out to Quest reporter Dan O'Hagan for this line. You wouldn't let Salford walk your dogs the amount of time they've lost leads. Two games took place on Tuesday night. Morecambe beat Port Vale 2-1 after scoring twice in the first 12 minutes. That just their fifth win of the season in the league. It means there's 3 points between them and bottom side Stevenage. Stevenage, by the way, drew 0-0 with Oldham. Unconfirmed if Wesley ran to that one.
In terms of the weekend, Newport County against Swindon Town is the one we're going to focus on. It's at Rodney Parade, which gives me the chance to say Rodney Parade. Newport, boy, did they need that win at Scunthorpe last weekend, Adrian. The Exiles first in the league since they won the reverse game back in October.
Yeah, it was huge, but it was preceded by a great win in the Leasing.com trophy against MK Dons. And I looked at the starting lineup that he put out for that game, and it was really strong. And it shows the value of still being in that kind of competition. It can be the springboard for, you know, to give you or to restore confidence. So well done them for getting back into it. Flynn is under pressure, and I think the cracks have begun to show. I read some quotes that he's been getting really wound up by some of the fans on social media. He's got it in for 100 or so of them on social media that have clearly got their knives out for him. And some of the fans he's bumped into, he's criticised their sort of opinions, which I always think is a dangerous thing to do. You've got to be careful. He's a local lad, I know, and he should be regarded as a local hero, really. He's saved the club from relegation. He's brought nothing but good times until now, but the cracks have shown. The 4-4-2 diamond appears to be working for them. But what they did last time out is go back to 3-4-1-2. For me, Newport have to be brave here and play two up top and just rattle opponents. That is, in my opinion, their best policy. They're not a pretty team. They haven't got ball players. Rodney Parade gives me another excuse to say it. Rodney Parade is a bad pitch. It's always been an awful, muddy, sticky pitch. You've got to go big, especially against a footballing side like Swindon. I expect them to boom it in this game and play the percentage game. You look at the goals they scored against Scunthorpe in that victory. They were scruffy goals. They both came from long balls. So this will be a proper clash of styles. And if Newport are going to win it, they need to make it an ugly game.
Sam, how are you feeling confidence-wise about your old boys at the moment? They're top of the table. They're 9 points clear of fourth-place Crewe, but they've played two games more. Are you thinking that it is going to be League One football for the Robins next season?
Well, I hope so. I'm nervous about it because, obviously, they've lost Owen Doyle and they're down to the bare bones at the moment. So
9 points, eh?
Yeah, but I'm a little bit apprehensive because I think it's big that he gets a few additions in this window. That was an amazing result at the weekend. Amazing result because Crewe are a very good side. They started the game brilliantly. I thought Swindon were going to be really under pressure. And Richie Welland spoke about, I think that's the first time he's ever played a back three. I think he said that, starting a game, which is incredible. And he did it a little bit for the surprise factor and also because Crewe have struggled against front twos this season whenever they faced them. So I thought tactically excellent again, and whatever he's done tactically, whatever way they set up, they've got results. Jerry Yates playing as the number nine gets an amazing goal, wonderful ball from the left hand side, great movement, and the finish is a man who is full of confidence, even though I wouldn't say he's played second fiddle, but he hasn't played loads of football down the middle. Now that they've got a centre half in already this week, which is the area where they're really struggling. That back three at the weekend consisted of Caddis, who's a right back. Anthony Grant is a central midfielder, and Broadbent, who's played very little football this season. And going into this game, touching on what Adrian said, mm-hmm. Broadbent is a monster aerially, very physical, ex-military, I believe. He'll fancy that against Newport, against Jamil Matt in particular.
He'll be able to handle the Newport artillery.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. Oh, sorry. Pause for that. Sensational. They have brought in Romani Edmonds-Green from Huddersfield, a young kid. So I'm not sure how much he'll be rubbing his hands together at the prospect, his first game being at Rodney Parade. But yeah, I expect Swindon to go up, but I'd really like them to get a high-calibre striker and maybe one more defensive reinforcement in the next couple of weeks.
Newport against Swindon then, Joe. I've been favouring away wins, it would seem, so far today. I'm guessing this is the most likely outcome according to William Hill here.
Yeah, again, an odds against price and quite a tempting price for me. 27-20 Swindon are to get the win. Newport 2-1 with the draw. Just a little bit bigger than that at 23-10.
Superb. Well, that's just about it for this week. But before we go, there's just time for the never tedious What Are The Chaps Up To This Weekend section. Clark, are you working or are you going back to Peppa Pig World?
No, I'm working. And in the Premier League, Arsenal against Sheffield United, I'll be commentating on that one. So, interesting game. But no EFL action in person for me.
Sam?
I haven't got a game at the moment for the weekend. I am working, I believe, but I'm yet to be given allocated. So, don't know. Fulham v Middlesbrough Friday night to kick things off, and then some form of soccer on Saturday, I presume.
Lovely stuff. Caroline's back next week. I'll speak to you in a fortnight. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter, and make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
Join Ruby Walsh, Paddy Power, Tom Nugent, and a whole host of great guests each week on Paddy Power's new racing podcast, From the Horse's Mouth. Tune in for analysis, interviews, and a bit of crack from the greatest trio since salt, vinegar, and chips, but marginally less unhealthy. The first episode is out now.
Muddy Knees Media.